weather that we wanted. Even last week, she's like, cloud cover. No, we got cloud cover. So it's great. It's really good to be out here with you all. I will keep my time shorter still for the sake of the outdoor church experience. Have you ever been camping when a storm has hit? Anybody? Anybody had that experience? Does anybody want to share their experience? Andy. Yeah, so went with a scout group. Storms came on the mountains in West Virginia. Blew over at least one tent, ripped another tent in half. That sounds pretty intense, yeah. That sounds pretty crazy. Anybody else? Alex.
My family went camping and just drove home in the middle of the night. It was just so raining.
So somebody, when the storm finally came, just packed up and decided to leave because the storm was bad. And that's pretty reasonable. There's probably some wisdom to that. Yeah, I remember a number of years ago I went camping, and around 2 a.m., a storm showed up in the middle of the night. The lightning struck, wind started whipping through the trees, and we're trying to close up the tent, zip up every window, make sure everything is secure as possible. And I just remember laying there in the dark and recognizing, as the storm raged on, I am not in control of anything at this moment. And we made it through in the morning, the sun rose, and we had soggy socks and gathered around the fire that we made in the morning and retold how wild the night had been the night before. And there's a little bit in this, I think, in Habakkuk 3. Because the storm that we've encountered in the text, the things that God is sending, don't stop, but something seems to shift. There seems to be a recognition about Habakkuk, where he's put up a fight up to this point about everything that's happening, but now he recognizes, I think, he doesn't control anymore. There's sort of a sense of surrender, and even song at some point in this text. Anybody here, when we used to meet out here regularly, who are our people that endured the summer and winter months of this experience, where we didn't have anything, right? We didn't have a building yet to move into, and we had to remind ourselves that church isn't the building, it was the people, and it was uncomfortable. We didn't have a roof, no kids ministry at the time, no screens for lyrics, but we had worship. We had each other, and God still showed up. And it's fitting that we're wrapping the series in Habakkuk in this sort of setting. Because I think there's a reflection here for Habakkuk as well. When things are stripped away, what is our response? He's not in a safe temple. He's not at a big party. He's sort of in this broken world, remembering the God who was. So let's remember where we are at. Let's retrace really quick. Let's go all the way back to Moses, Israelites heading to the promised land. And then Joshua helps lead them into the promised land. They take over all the tribes and cities, and they're sort of ununified after Joshua. They're sort of wondering what the future is going to hold, and there's a lot of strife, there's a lot of brokenness, and then we get the book of Judges. God helps send people to help redeem, and there's sort of these cycles of just brokenness throughout Israel as they seek what kind of nation they're going to be. And eventually they ask for a king, and God sort of allows them in some ways to choose a king in Saul, who's not the best king, and ultimately God will choose a king for them in David, who at least starts as a much better king. David and Solomon are sort of kings over a unified Israel for a number of years, and then things start falling apart real quickly. Israel's starting to run into all sorts of problems, and then prophets start arising, speaking to them, Amos and Micah and Hosea and Isaiah all start speaking to them during this time, saying, hey, you've got all this brokenness. Things need to change. Otherwise, things are going to go really far south real quick. And they do. The Assyrians, this nation from the north, ends up attacking the northern kingdom, taking out the northern kingdom quite a bit. But the southern kingdom in Israel ends up having some sort of reform, some sort of revival, and fights off the Assyrians and stays unified, at least for a little bit of time. And then the southern kingdom goes back into the ways it had always been before that, and prophets start speaking again, which is kind of where we start picking up in Habakkuk, saying, hey, things are not looking good. My nation's not doing well, but there's this new group, the Babylonians, who have taken over the Assyrians, and they are on the horizon. And so that's where we pick up. And Habakkuk's this prophet, this question asker, this truth teller. And he looks at the world and says, God, how long will evil keep winning? And God answered, not in the way Habakkuk probably wanted. God didn't say, I'll fix it tomorrow and everything will be great. But he knows that justice will happen. And Habakkuk has to decide, will I trust God when I'm afraid or I don't know the future, when I don't understand? And in the text today, Habakkuk's going to start remembering the story of God, who God is. So when I say, what is the biggest thing you've ever seen or most powerful thing you've ever seen in nature, what would that be? Adults, kids, anybody can answer this question.
A storm on a lake.
A storm on a lake? Yeah, that could be pretty powerful. Getting that lake water. Tornadoes, yeah, that'll destroy just about anything. Tsunamis, that takes out tons of stuff. Earthquake? Is that what I heard? Hurricane? Yeah, hurricanes are pretty strong. As a Miami child, I experienced that. Anything else? These are all great. And Habakkuk starts describing God, and he uses all of this fantastic sort of natural language of the God who is over all that kind of stuff in this text. So imagine, I'm going to read this text. And I'm actually going to read 1 through 15 out of the Message version of the Bible. This is really poetic language, and sometimes our straight one-to-one language doesn't quite pick up just the beauty that's being unpacked in this text. So I'm going to read out of Eugene Peterson's sort of paraphrasing of this, at least for 1 through 15. So it says this, God, I've heard what our ancestors say about you. I'm stopped in my tracks, down to my knees. Do among us what you did among them. Work among us as you worked among them, and as you bring judgment, as you surely must, remember mercy. God's on his way again, retracing the salvation route, coming up from the south through Taman, the Holy One from Mount Paran. Skies are blazing with his splendor, his praise sounding through the earth, his cloud brightness like dawn, exploding, spreading, forked lightning shooting from his hand. What power hidden in his fists? Plague marches before him, pestilence at his heels. He stops. He shakes the earth. He looks around. Nations tremble. The age-old mountains fall to pieces. Ancient hills collapse like a spent balloon. The paths God takes are older than the oldest mountains and hills. I saw everyone worried in a panic. Old wilderness adversaries, Cushan and Midian, were terrified, hoping he wouldn't notice them. God is a river you're mad at? Angry at old river? Were you raging at sea when you rode horse and chariot through to salvation? You unfurled your bow, you let loose the volley of arrows, you split earth with rivers. Mountains saw what was coming, they twist in pain, flood waters poured forth. Oceans roared and reared huge waves, there's your tsunami. Sun and moon stopped in their tracks. Their flashing arrows stopped them. Your lightning strike spears impaled them. Angry, you stomped through earth. Furious, you crushed the godless nations. And a lot of that language may have been a reference to even the flood and ultimately God's judgment the previous time. But you are out to save your people, to save your specially chosen people. You beat the stuffing out of King Wicked, stripped him naked from head to toe, set his severed head on his own spear, and blew away his army. Scattered they were to the four winds and ended up food for the sharks. You gallop through the sea on your horses, racing on the crest of the waves. So this is amazing, fantastic language that Habakkuk is employing here to say, this is the God I trust. The God who has been all powerful before, who has all this ability to bring the storm and bring the hurricanes, but it's also the God who has saved his people. And he's going to do it again. It's sort of the reminder here. And Habakkuk has an honest faith response. He says, I hear, so he's recognizing this, I hear and my body trembles. My lips quiver at the sound. Rottenness enters into my bones. My legs tremble beneath me. Yet I will quietly wait on the day of trouble to come upon people who invade us. So Habakkuk's not pretending to be brave. He's even saying, this makes me shake. he's honest about his fear. But he chooses to trust in the midst of it. Have you ever packed for a trip? And like halfway through packing, you're like, I really don't know what to bring. Maybe the weather is like all over the map, or you don't know what you're actually going to be doing there. And you just don't know. You can't pack everything and every possibility into your bag. And I would say faith is a little bit like that. You don't know everything ahead of time. You don't know all the details that are going to come. You can't pack for every possibility. But you do have to trust the one who's leading you, that he can lighten your load or keep you walking. Maybe you can remember a time when you were scared, but you trusted someone anyways, right? This, as parents, you have to do this with your kids all the time, being like, just trust me. Like, I'm not going to let you get hurt. I'm going to take care of you. Do you trust me? I know it's scary. Do you trust me? And Habakkuk keeps talking, though the fig tree should not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, the produce of the olive fail, and the fields yield no food, the flock be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will take joy in the God of my salvation. And so Habakkuk's saying, even if the pantry's empty, even when the crops don't grow, even when the world starts falling apart, I will still rejoice. Like, this isn't fake joy. This is somehow faith-filled joy. It's choosing joy because God is still with them. I'm sure this has been happening. People have built Lego sets, right? And have you ever stopped halfway through building a Lego set? Does it look like the picture when you stop halfway through? No. It usually like doesn't really resemble the thing you're actually trying to build. It doesn't look like the picture. It's a pile of parts. And that's kind of probably how Habakkuk feels at the end of the story, right? The world is not fully put back together. Justice isn't finished. There's pieces, and maybe he even has the box where he can see the future picture, but what is right before him is a bit of a mess. But here's what he does. Even without that, he sings. He trusts the builder. And that's what faith sort of looks like, learning to rejoice before the Lego set is ever fully done. And God was with them then, just like Habakkuk looked back and remembered. He goes, I've seen God's power and I've seen him deliver before. We do the same. This is part of our faith journey too. Like, I remember the very first time we decided to meet in this courtyard. We didn't have walls or air conditioning. It was already cold as can be. We had to start setting rules about how cold it got before we called off the service because we'd show up and it'd be ice on the ground. But we had worship and community, and God's Spirit was with us. And it's also a reminder, not just our time out here, but all around the world, Christians gather in all sorts of different places. We are a privileged nation to have gathering buildings and everything else. Through history, whether gathering in caves in Cappadocia, whether underground churches in China, whether poor mountain villages in other countries, and that the church still gathers and worships in so many different settings without a fully fledged kids ministry and air conditioning and other things that we enjoy and they're good things, but we don't need them. We'll be okay. And they all proclaim the same news. They all proclaim the same God. The God that Habakkuk sings about in this text is still with us. Whether life is full or scary, whether there's a roof or not, whether persecution or privilege, God is the same God. The God of thunder and lightning and power, and the God of covenant, love, and steadfastness. And he says, to finish this, God, the Lord, is my strength. He makes my feet like the deer's. He makes me tread on my high places. So I've talked about this before, but the wilderness in Israel is probably not as flat and deserty as we tend to think. It's pretty mountainy. It's pretty rugged. If you were to wander through it, you probably couldn't see much around you because it's river runoff cut into mountains. And so the deer here is likely something maybe like a Nubian ibex or something else. These sort of mountain deer. It's the most likely deer in these areas. And they walk through terrain sort of similar to mountain goats. They almost have like suction cups on their feet to help them get around, to be silent, to navigate some of the hardest conditions, I would argue, in earth. And God has given them feet to do these unbelievable things. And I don't think Habakkuk's prayer is about the feet, like saying, God, make my paths easy. Just make these circumstances easier. But he is recognizing that God gives the right kind of feet. That if you have the feet of the desert deer, you can go anywhere. The toughest path is possible with the right feet. Right? Rough, steep, smooth. David reflects the same way in 2 Samuel. He basically says the same thing, that God has gives us what we need in each and every season because he is good. Whether the path is rocky or not, I can trust that God will get me through it. And this is what life sometimes feels like, rocky, uncertain, harsh. But faith doesn't make it suddenly flat. Faith gives us the kind of feet to handle it. Doesn't always change the situation, but it does change us. It gives us strong legs, steady hearts, and surprising joy. And sometimes we expect God to feel like Disney World or something else, fun, clear, full of celebration, my time with God being this positive, always good thing. But more often, it can feel like a wilderness. It's where God formed Israel. It's where Jesus went before his ministry. It's hard, but it's holy ground. And that's what Habakkuk discovers. And getting all this news that has been sort of negative upon negative in some ways, it's harsher than he expects. He recognizes that in it, God is faithful here. And joy isn't about escape. Joy is about presence. So I'll leave you adults with a question and kids with a question. Sort of adults. What is sort of your fig tree in life right now? Or the empty stables? What's missing in your life right now, but you can still sit there and say, yet I rejoice? Because that's what Habakkuk does. He goes, look, everything might be stripped from me, but I can still rejoice. And maybe there's something in your life that you're walking through, something that you feel like is a gap right now, that perhaps it's a moment of reflection to just say, you know what? If God's still with me, I'll be okay. And kids, where can you trust God even when something feels scary or sad? Because that's what Habakkuk had to do. There was a lot of bad news and scary things on the horizon. And God invites him into trusting him, even through the scary things. And so that's an opportunity to kind of ask that. I'm not going to ask you to share. But what might that be for you? So let me remind you, church is not a place. It's a people. And the God who brought us through the last season, God who met us in the courtyard years ago, the God who shook the mountains in Habakkuk, he goes with us still. And may we walk into the week like deer in high places, joyful, steady, and surrendered. So we're going to move into communion out here and celebrate. Ultimately, what Jesus allows us now to walk into. Because of Jesus' death on the cross, we have forgiveness of sins. We have God's presence that much more that is real, active, the Holy Spirit with us, God with us to the end of the age. And that can only be done by Jesus' purification, his death and his blood that brings that about in us now.